Subaru, now in their new location in front of the Savoy 16 Theater. Information on the full line of Subarus available from Paul Moser or Kelly Wetherill, certified Subaru specialists. Email address subaru@wardenmartin.com. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Center for East Asian and Pacific Studies, hosting its annual film series March 11th and 12th at the Virginia Theater as part of its Year of Asia program of events. More information at 265-0640 or on the web at eaps.uiuc.edu.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. We're also pleased to have here back on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And monthly on a Tuesday, always the second Tuesday, she is here, and we give you the chance to call in and ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape. So we're talking about trees and shrubs, flowers, things that you can eat, things that are just ornamental. We can also take questions about houseplants, any and all of that. If you are already just itching to get out there and start doing things, she says, well, yeah, actually, there are some things that you could be doing this time of year. And maybe you're also thinking about what you would like to plant this year. You have questions like that. There's some kind of problem that's just hanging around from last year. You need a little bit of advice. Any and all of that is certainly fine, and I know Sandy will do her best to help you out. 333-9455, that's for Champaign-Urbana, folks, if you'd like to call in. Also, we have a toll-free line. That's 800-222-9455. So if you have questions, you can call us. Welcome back.
Thank you.
After Sunday, everybody want to be out there and thinking.
I know.
Okay, and it is, after all, only the 8th of March.
I know. It's hard to believe. But, you know, this is a great time to be a gardener, I think. You know, everybody's so optimistic. You know, the Japanese beetles haven't been here yet and all this stuff. Just optimism just springs eternal. Mm-hmm. I love to talk about gardening this time of year.
Okay. Well, we're waiting here. Maybe we'll get some calls lined up. If people are thinking about wanting to, if we get some more good days and people are wanting to get out there and do some things in the yard, what should be some of their top priorities?
Yeah, I think probably the top priorities is anything that needs to be done when the plant is still dormant, because when we start getting these warmer days, it's not going to take too long that things are going to start popping out. Mm-hmm. And so I'm a little bit concerned about that. So that would be things like maybe you have a dormant spray that you need to put on your apples. This would be a good time to be thinking about that. Maybe you've had a problem with peach leaf curl on your peaches. And this is the only time that really a spray will do anything for that peach leaf curl. And it's very common in home orchards. It causes kind of a crinkling on the leaf of the peach, but then of the peach leaves, but then it also can spread to the peaches themselves. And so peach leaf curl, this would be the time of year you'd want to be spraying a lime sulfur or Bordeaux mix in order to take care of that particular fungus. So that's real important. And just dormant pruning. You know, there's a lot of things that we talk about dormant pruning in the way of whether it's fruit trees, pretty much any of your trees that we talk about, this would be a good time to sort of think about doing that. So pruning, you know, sharpen those pruners, get going on that. Also, even we were talking earlier about even thinking about if you're going to be doing any seeding on your lawn, this mm-hmm. would be a good time to start at least thinking about that. Usually we think about in central Illinois, it's March 15th through about April 15th. So we're really getting to that point. So you need to start making some plans, maybe getting some seed, those kind of things.
Okay. So that really, it really is. I told you about how the other day I saw just this past weekend, I saw somebody out and they were tossing out grass seed, and I thought to myself, isn't it a little early for that?
Yeah,
well, maybe it was
a little
but really not, you know, within the next, within another week probably would be the time to do it.
And really you'd want to look at probably the forecast for the next week or so, because what you really want is higher soil temperatures so that seed doesn't sit there for a long period of time. You really want the seed to pop out mm-hmm. as quick as it can. So if it really looks like the week is going to be particularly cold, even when we start getting into March 15, it looks like it's really going to be cold, I'd probably hold off for a while, because we certainly still have time to do a little bit later.
Okay. What if you were thinking about doing either weed control or mm-hmm. some fertilizing for the lawn? When is the first time that you might think about doing that?
Yeah, usually with now University of Illinois, we're a little bit different than maybe what you see with some of the popular lawn care companies or lawn care chemicals. Usually we say to wait until the 1st of May. in order to do your first fertilizer application. And really the thinking is that you'll have a lot less leaf disease problems on the lawns if you actually wait until a little bit later. And then also making sure that you do your late fall fertilization. So thinking that that late fall fertilization helps that early green up. So usually we say to wait a little bit on the fertilization. Certainly if you've got weed problems, probably this time of year we're looking at more of some of those, those really early, like what we often consider sort of winter annuals, things like a chickweed is going to be popping up here real soon. Things like creeping speedwell, henbit. There's lots of those early things that if you really have a problem with them, you need to either be removing them before they go to seed, or you need to be thinking about some sort of post-emergent control for them.
Okay. We have a couple of callers here. Let's get to them and talk first with someone in Charleston on our line four. Hello.
Hi, I have a couple quick questions. First of all, what would be the earliest time you would recommend soil testing?
The earliest?
Mm-hmm.
Really, spring is probably the best time to really do soil testing is really more in probably in the fall or something like that. But you can certainly do it this time of year and not have a problem. Are you having a problem or you're just going to be doing something different? Or?
Well, we're putting in some new landscaping and we want to know what to do before we get too far along.
Yeah, I would go ahead and do it now then. And that way you'd have plenty of time to get back the results, kind of see what you need to do. Because really, if you need to be doing anything, most of that stuff is not going to be quick acting. It's going to be something that you need to work into the soil, or that way you know before you get started.
Okay. And my second question is, I'm wanting to plant some daffodils and interplant something with them that will grow up a little later and hide the dying foliage.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something I can plant at the same time as daffodils that you'd recommend?
So you're talking about doing that later in the season?
Well, could you plant daffodils in the spring? What would happen if
you can
that?
Find them? Probably the hardest part is you usually can't find them this time of year because normally we plant them in October. Certainly if you could find them, they're probably not going to flower this year, but certainly next year they would flower for you. I've had done a lot of different things. I've certainly interplanted them with daylilies and had pretty good success with that. Also, I've interplanted them with hostas. Really, you just want to think of anything that's going to kind of come up and cover the foliage. And I've done any variety of perennials with them, but probably those are two, depending on what kind of site you have. Those have worked out pretty well.
All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Let's go to Urbana. This is our next caller, line number one. Hello.
Yes, hi. Mm-hmm. I had a question. On an earlier show, I heard it recommended that if you have a shady area where your grass doesn't grow as well, you might want to plant moss. And I was wondering if there's any particular moss you would recommend for backyard and front yard in Urbana.
Probably with the moss. That may have been the last program we were talking about with Ken Drews, the author, and we were just talking about how we liked how we liked moss. I think pretty much, although I'm sure you can buy moss, you can buy anything, I would just build it and it will come, is kind of my theory with moss. I mean, if it really is a site where moss is going to enjoy, it's going to be, it needs to be an area where it's shady and moist and where there isn't a whole, where it's open, where there isn't a whole lot of other plant material. I have had people actually tell me that they've transplanted moss, where they've just gotten moss from one area and transplanted it, and you certainly could do that if you're really getting into moss.
I mean, is this something you can buy at, like, Prairie Gardens, or?
Moss?
Yeah.
Not moss.
Oh.
There's a few things that kind of look like moss
That
you might be able to purchase, but plain old moss. I think I've actually seen a catalog that actually delves into moss, but I think I would be more inclined just to go with something that's already here and do a little transplanting if you have it in another part of the yard or something like that.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. All right, thank
it's good to hear people thinking about. I usually talk to people who want to get rid of moss, but I think it's kind of pretty.
That's what I was thinking.
I think it's kind of pretty.
Yeah, I think, wasn't it that the person who was calling in when we did the show last time, actually, they wanted to get rid of it.
They wanted
didn't
to get
want
rid of
it.
Yeah, Ken and I were trying to convince them that you should just leave it.
Exactly. Okay. And certainly there are a lot of different things. If you have shady spots, there are a lot of different things you can.
Sure.
It seems to me that over the last, I don't know how many years, shade gardening has become really, really huge.
Yeah, and actually Ken Drews has a nice book on shade gardening. There's plenty of gardens. And you know, the more and more I think about it, you know, in July and August, where do you want to be? You want to be in your shade garden. You don't want to be out there in the sun garden. So I think there is, and there's so many more plants now, a lot of new breeding and things like the coral bells and lungworts and some of those shady plants that there's such diversity now, and certainly in hostas, that there's so many things out there that you can do with them, with shade gardens.
Yeah. Okay. Caller in Aurora. Let's go there on our line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Well, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
And, welcome back.
Oh, thanks.
You're a sure sign of spring.
There you go.
Although the weather out here doesn't, up here doesn't say that.
Yeah, today's not good.
But I had three things I wanted to discuss, and it's funny, the shade gardens was the thing I wanted to say. I have a burpee catalog, and I never noticed these before, but I work on the plant booth for the Fox Valley Animal Welfare, and this one woman keeps telling me that she has a, she can't find any plants for the shade. So thinking about that, the book has New Guinea hybrids and African hybrids.
Of impatience,
Yeah, and the Jungle Jewels of the African hybrids are just beautiful.
Yeah, those are some fun new colors, I think, in Impatience. I think people are going to be pleased with those. Even some corals and, you know, some bicolors and stuff, maybe some colors we haven't seen before.
And the Jungle Rain mix is just beautiful. I really think if people look through their books, they would find these plants and be very, very happy with them.
I think it's just a mindset. Sometimes if you're used to gardening in the sun, you're used to things that, you know, black-eyed Susans and all these things, and it's just sort of, you just kind of have to do a little switch and think about some other plants.
And I think also they need a little bit more watering and care as far as watering.
I think in the very beginning, especially if you have like a maple tree, I think maple trees are probably one of the worst because it's a very dry shade. And so you really, in that very beginning, you really have to make sure you do a little watering with them, if, especially if you're gardening underneath maple trees. So,
well, I was trying with much work, hard work, to get a butterfly garden together last year. And I guess I won't give up this year. I'll work on it again. I only got one butterfly.
Aw. What kind of plants are you using?
Well, you know, I probably could tell you if I tried, but I don't want to take up the time unless you want to rattle some off very quickly that are supposed to be. I have a list.
Sure. Well, I think butterfly weed, the milkweed, is probably one that should always be in a garden. They really, the monarch caterpillars, you know, certainly like to feed on them, as well as the butterflies like to feed, like to nectar on the flowers. So that's always a good one. And it's just a great garden plant anyway. New Jersey tea is another kind of a woody plant.
New Jersey
plant.
Tea? The
yeah.
New Jersey tea?
Yeah. New Jersey
the
tea.
The prairie plant?
Yeah.
Really?
That's a super, that's a
that's
super nectar plant.
List.
Oh, it's a great nectar plant. I happen to be over in one of the the Sand Prairie Ridge, I think is the name of the preserve, just on the north, the west side of Illinois. And the New Jersey tea, they were just, every single little flower had a butterfly on it.
Oh,
they love it.
Gosh, so I have to get a prairie plant. That is not on my list.
Yeah, there's quite a few prairie plants that actually the butterflies like. So.
Yeah, and I have a lot of those plants in already. I just began to think, well, the other thing I wanted to talk about was, what vegetable would you say, besides tomatoes and zucchini, which are very much a vegetable that you can do almost anything and everything with, like zucchini, you can make bread, pickles,
right,
etc., what other vegetable would you say was that type of vegetable to grow?
That you can do all kinds of things with it?
Yeah.
Well, other squash,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, that was the only thing I could think of is other squashes. Like, certainly a lot of the winter squashes, other than the summer squashes like zucchini are, but all the winter squashes, you can make desserts out of them as well as any of the casseroles.
Gosh, acorn?
Well, acorn, butternut. There's actually a new butternut squash out now called Bon Bon. It's one of the new ones for this year. So there's some, I like the winter squashes, and even a lot of them are actually fairly small. We always think of these giant, you know, Hubbards and stuff that for most people are just too darn big, but there's a lot of smaller ones now. Delicata, I think, is one you probably have seen. It's really pretty, kind of a striped looking squash, but it's a nice sort of a one person size winter squash. And I think those are great. You don't have to deal with this.
And that's what I was going to buy as far as zucchini. They have one that is edible at 5 to 8 inches.
Right, there's lots of new zucchinis now, too. There's even one that's a round ball. I'm trying to think of the name of it.
Yeah,
8 ball or something. I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, one night I couldn't sleep, so I got up and I made out my list to send to Irby. I thought it was the best thing I've done lately.
There you go.
Very good.
Thanks,
well,
much.
Good, sure.
Good to hear your voice.
Sure, great,
thank you for the call.
Thanks.
Happy spring. Bye.
You too.
Our guest this morning here in this hour of Focus 580 is Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She is on the program once a month on a Tuesday. We talk about lawn and garden care, growing things in the home landscape. And if you have questions, you're thinking about what you'd like to plant this spring and summer, or you have some sort of problem, you're not quite sure how to deal with it, you can give us a call and talk with Sandy. 333-9455. That's for people who are here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Someone over in Belgium, near Danville, line number 4. They're next. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of items. First off, you were talking about moss. You're talking about how nice it is in the summertime. Really, it's a very beautiful plant this time of year. If you go to nature preserves and stuff, especially over along the Wabash Valley, there are mosses over there like you've never seen before. They can get 2 and 3 inches tall. It's the most amazing stuff.
And it's a wonderful color, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
This time of year.
Deep emerald green you'll ever see.
Yeah.
Fabulous to look at. But anyway, that's just grown completely naturally. There's nothing, nobody plants
it. Yes, right. Build it and they'll come.
That's right. All right. And it's usually on the worst spots.
Yeah.
Lots of rocks.
You're right.
All that kind of stuff. Well, the question I wanted to ask you about is I grow some peach trees, okay? And you were just mentioning peach curl.
Mm-hmm.
And I occasionally get that problem, but I have another problem. And the peaches I grow are a heritage variety. They're peaches that probably most people wouldn't want to grow. They grow small little peaches. It's called a Crawford peach.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't buy plants for them, as far as I've been able to see. But they make a most intense peach flavor.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
great.
Fabulous. Oh, it's just fabulous peach flavor. The thing I wanted to ask you about is, can you crop them down to make them more like espalating it, and once they're large trees? And when I say large, there might be 15.
I'm sorry, did we lose
Cole Stiller?
No, they might be 15 feet tall.
Okay. And so you're talking about doing the espalier thing? With it.
Yeah. Just so I can reach them.
Yeah. Well, you certainly can do, and peaches are one that need a certain amount of pruning because they really can get kind of out of control.
Oh,
so
yeah.
As you have found out. As far as espalier, usually we do that when they're fairly young because you're trying to get that sort of one-dimensional look to them. So usually you have to do a certain amount of training. I suppose if you looked at it and you really found that it had kind of that one-dimensional where you could do a certain amount of pruning on them to make them that way. But it's certainly a heck of a lot easier if you start early.
Oh, yeah.
As in when you first plant them.
Yeah, but I'm running into the they get so tall.
You know? But you can certainly do some pruning on them and make it shorter.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. And when you do cut those, I mean, I'm talking about limbs that are, 3 or 4 inches in diameter, maybe 5, some of the biggest ones.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to cover them with something?
No, you really don't. I know that used to be the thought that you needed to cover those surfaces, but you really don't need to. We really have found that through research that you're much better off just leaving it. Just let the plant grow over those areas as it needs to. Don't leave a stub. That's probably one of the big things. And don't make a perfectly flush cut. You want to leave just a little bit of what's called the branch bark ridge. You can kind of see that little ridge area, and you kind of want to leave that part. But it grows over just fine.
Well, the ones I wanted to cut were the ones that are pretty much going straight up. You know, the main chunks, I want to, whack them off because they just keep going up and up and up,
Right. You may find you want to do that, or maybe just looking at the structure, you may find you just want to head them back a little bit, as in just trimming them down. But you kind of really have to maybe get a good book or something so you can kind of see the overall shape of them. Because you want some main scaffold branches and something so you really have some good strength to them. But you're right. Those ones that go straight up usually are not ones that are most productive anyway.
No, and they get way beyond your reach.
Right.
The other thing is these peaches have a tendency to have a blackish sort of spots on them sometimes. And it does affect the peaches, so I usually throw those away. Do you know what the name that is?
Does it go into the flesh, or is
well,
just an
anti? It's usually like a fungus that grows across the top, or you know, kind of like a dark spot. But at the end of the year, when you harvest them, those areas are not near as tasty, and they're kind of pithy. And
Okay. Yeah, it sounds like you may be getting. They do get some scab problems, and that sounds like that's probably what it is. I don't know if you could. Maybe look at some pictures at your local extension office or something. They could probably figure out which one just by looking at some pictures. The University of Illinois has some great publications on tree fruit diseases. Then you can look at the pictures. And usually by looking at a picture, you can figure out what it is and kind of go from there. But I'd almost bet you're getting a little fungus. It's one of the scabs or something.
What's the way to control them?
Usually it's through fungicide sprays.
Oh, I prefer not to have to put something on it.
And you may be having a problem just because maybe the plant's getting more overgrown and you're not getting very good air penetration.
That could
be part of your problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, ma'am. Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you. We'll keep going here. The next caller is someone in Eureka on our line 4 right here. Hello.
I want to inquire, when is the spring flower show?
Oh, the Horticulture Club flower show? I don't have a calendar in front of me. It's April. David's going to look it up here real quick.
Is it on the U of I Extension website here someplace?
No, it'd be on the University of Maryland. It's whenever Mother's Day is here at the U of I.
Oh, okay.
Mother's Day weekend or whatever it is. It's April, like the 19th, 20th. We'll find it here in a minute.
I might have to noodle around there. I'll bet I could find it.
You'll find it. It's always on what they call Mother's Day weekend. It's not Mother's Day in May, but what U of I has is their Mother's Day weekend. So it's always that. And I think it's like that third weekend in April. That's what I'm betting. But it's an excellent show. Have you been there before?
Yes.
It's really great show. The students do a super job of doing all kinds of gardens. If people have never been there before, they really need to go to it's at the Stock Pavilion, and really a fun time. You can actually buy some plants, see what different gardens they have, and get some ideas about landscaping. It's really, really a lot of fun. So we'll find the date here real quick for you.
I'm
pretty sure
here.
It's that third weekend in April, and unfortunately I don't have a calendar in front of me to know, but we'll find it. So keep listening. By the end of the show, keep listening.
We'll find that.
We'll put David on the spot.
Was there something else that you wanted to ask?
Thank you.
Okay, keep listening. Right, we'll find the date for you.
We'll go on here. We have a caller next in Pena on our line number 2. Hello.
Hello. Yeah. Back in the 50s when I used to cross the quadrangle at the U of I, I'd go right by Marl Plots, and I think they used to experiment with corn there. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe you might give us a little update on it. Thanks.
Well, as far as an update, it's one of the oldest, if not the oldest. I think it is actually the oldest research plot when it comes to corn. And the undergrad library was actually built underground in order that it didn't shade that particular field area. So it's very interesting. And actually, if you go to that area, there is actually a little write-up right there, and you can see what's going on there. But yeah, it's still being used, and so that's pretty amazing stuff.
Right. The Hort Club is definitely I could tell you when
it
was in 2001.
But can you find Mother's Day weekend?
I'll keep on here. Sandy Mason is our guest this morning here on Focus. She's going to be taking over while I'm spending time on
searching. it's
Mother's Day weekend. Okay.
And it's actually usually in the U of I phone Mother's book, Day. Even at the very beginning when they list the schedule.
Okay. We'll keep looking, and if other people have questions on things that grow in the
Or if anybody knows when the Mother's Day weekend
Some, yeah, I think,
is.
I think Harriet Williamson
I think we have
is
a couple
on the
people
case
on
here.
This, on the case.
Well, I was actually good. There was something else I occurred to me.
Now you've lost it.
Now I completely lost it. Okay, here's April 16th. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Harriet Williamson, she figured it out. April 16th.
It's a two-day. Usually it's a Saturday, Sunday. So it'd be like the 16th and 17th probably, whatever
probably
Saturday, Sunday is.
And it's always so that's the thing when the hort students they do sort of sample display gardens and you can get some different ideas and you can buy plants and it's a really nice
and it's a good it's a great opportunity. I know the students work so hard to get this done and it's a great opportunity for them to sort of work together and come up with the designs and order the plant material and do the whole thing. So it's a lot of fun.
Okay, that's April 16th on the U of I campus.
Yeah, and it's a Saturday and Sunday.
It's at Stock Pavilion.
And it's at the Stock Pavilion.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There on Pennsylvania Avenue, and it's free. There's actually all kinds of other things going on that weekend. I think Krannert does some interesting things at their art museum and all kinds of things for parents to go.
All right. I think we're getting somebody else here ready to go on our line number one. This is a caller in Champaign.
Hi.
Hello. Yes.
Creeping Charlie.
Oh, boy.
what about it?
Lawn.
Yeah.
What do you do with it?
Yes.
Yeah, I know that's really a tough one. Creeping Charlie, or it's also known as ground ivy, and sometimes if you're reading labels, it'll call it ground ivy instead of creeping Charlie. It really is. I get the most questions about how to get rid of it, as you probably know, and probably a couple things. Usually, about the only thing if you're trying to get out of your lawn, you're still going to try and dig it up, but that ends up being really tough. You can also use some of the post-emergent herbicides, and usually ones that have a couple different herbicides in them. And one of the brand names is called Trimec, and it just has three different herbicides in it, and that tends to be a little bit more effective. Probably the biggest thing with ground ivy is you got to get it when it's first starting to grow. And then usually you're always going to have to do a second application. So if you read the label on your product and it'll say you can reapply it in 6 to 8 weeks, I would definitely do that reapplication. So don't wait too late. I've seen people try to control it with herbicides just when it's just too hot. July and August, herbicides are not going to work well if it's hot and dry. So doing it earlier in the season, trying to get them before they go to flower, it's tough. It's really tough, and as you've probably found out.
So early in the season would be?
As soon as it's starting to, it's not quite doing its thing. I would say probably April, May, it's going to start growing. Once you see it's starting to grow, then it's time to consider doing something with it.
What's that do to the grass?
What does it do with the grass? These are broadleaf herbicides, so it's only going to take care of anything that has a broadleaf. So it would be things like dandelion and all that stuff. But if you use it according to label directions, it shouldn't do anything to your lawn.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
good
thank
luck.
You.
It's that's one of the things really, really tough.
Yes.
And it starts getting into
your,
I've had people complain it was getting into their strawberry beds. And if it would just stay, it's green. If it would just stay.
Has a pretty little purple flower.
Has a pretty little purple. And if you heard all those things and saw that in a catalog, you think, isn't that a wonderful plant? But it's just not a very good neighbor. It sort of just takes over.
That's right.
So, unfortunately, and if you have it in certain areas where there's nothing there that you want to keep, Roundup will actually do a fairly good job. Again, you're probably going to have to do a second application even of Roundup.
And so it seems like the problem with it, or I don't know, I suppose you might see it as a virtue, is it likes places that are actually not in good shape. It'll if you have places where your grass is really not very healthy and maybe it doesn't get good sun and maybe it's not a really desirable place, it likes it.
Right.
And that's
right,
where it's
right,
going
right.
to go.
And if you have a little bit of time or feel like you want to take the time, you can certainly, cover it with black plastic. If you leave it there for a couple months, when it gets really hot and stuff, usually you can do a pretty good job of just sort of killing it off just with black plastic. But you're going to have to leave it the plastic there for a couple months to really make sure that it's dead.
All right. To Indiana for another caller, line number four. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a winter king hawthorn.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very close to being, fully grown. I examined it yesterday, and I found two bagworms, which I neatly snipped off.
Mm-hmm.
But I found something on the end of a twig, which has me baffled. I was hoping you might be able, might know what it is. I've gone through most of my insect books, looking for egg deposits, basically.
Hmm.
I'm thinking it might be a moth. There are a series of eight. They're in a columns of two. They slightly overlap, and they're sort of a grayish brown. They fit the twig very well. I just happened to see it because I was at eye level, and I saw them. And the first thing that came to my mind was scale, but they're not scale. It's not a scale insect. And I'm thinking that they've been laid down by some moth, perhaps. They're ovid, and and they're very thin, wafer-like, they overlap. I'm starting from the center of the tree out to the twig, and they overlap each other. And it looks like there's actually nine. Looks like the tenth one may have fallen off. There's a some sort of adhesive thing that was laid down first, and they were put in it. And I've got my little eye magnifying glass out. It's a 10 power, and all it does is make them larger. You know, showing the irregulars on any kind of surface prominence or anything like that. It's very smooth. And it looks like, if a fingernail, you could flip them off pretty easily, but they're there right now.
Right.
And if they're moths, I'm not too much, I just sort of like to know what they are. I like butterflies and moths, and bagworms, I've seen what they can do pretty quickly, so I didn't take a chance on those. Opened them up, and they were still in the pupa stage.
Right.
And I just thought if you had some idea.
Well, I just trying to get from your description, I would, if you've got some reference books, I would look for, and it almost sounds like Katie did, eggs.
Yes.
And I would look at those.
I think I've seen, I said, God, I've seen something like that before, but
yeah.
I haven't been able to find it, so that's what I'll do. I'll hit the old Katie.
Yeah, look for Katie did, because they kind of lay them kind of in a little, almost looks like they sort of layer them out. And and of course, Katie did, we don't worry about.
No,
so it's just,
no.
So it's a gee whiz thing.
I don't know if it's the Xerxes Society for the Preservation of Invertebrates. And I belong to that outfit, so I'm ever since I was a little kid, I never stepped on ants and all that kind of stuff.
Good for you.
A lot of hassle.
Good for you. Bagworms off with their heads, but...
Yeah.
And so, I would look at a good picture, and they should have some pictures of eggs of katydids, and then I almost bet that's what it is, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Okey-doke.
So that's good.
Thanks
all right. Very good. Thank you. And next caller is in Champaign County. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi. Good morning. I have a tulip tree question and a... clematis question. The tulip tree question is, I have a volunteer and I need to move it at some point. It's only about 4 feet tall now. And do people call that by another name? I mean, somebody's telling me, no, that's not a tulip tree. It's got the big heart-shaped leaves. And I'm just wondering about, I understand it's got sort of a taproot, right?
Well, that taproot thing is sometimes a little, you should be able to move it. Sometimes they will call them yellow poplars. And I have seen that listed. So sometimes tulip tree, sometimes yellow poplar, depending on what part of the country you come from. It seems like those two names. But, it's got that funny sort of almost like 2 points at the top of the leaf. Is that kind of what it looks like? Like it comes at 2 points instead of one, like you think of with a maple leaf.
Well, maybe it isn't a tulip tree. It's
because it's not really a heart shape. I wonder if you've got a red bud.
Oh, well, it's big heart-shaped leaf.
Oh, that huge. Doesn't sound like tulip tree. It sounds like red bud.
Okay.
Which certainly do reseed themselves. Because I was wondering a little bit about tulip tree. I haven't seen them reseed themselves, but red buds will reseed themselves all over the place.
Well, I'm still wondering what this is. It has really huge leaves, like I'm bigger than my hand, right? So if I spread my hand out, it's bigger.
Unless it's catalpa.
It's a catalpa.
Okay. Catalpa might be the other one that has a heart-shaped leaf, but it is a big leaf. And then basswood would be the other one that has kind of a heart-shaped leaf.
I think I'm pretty sure it's a catalpa.
Okay.
But what I think I might have asked once before about root pruning, like if I wanted to transplant it, could I root prune it now and transplant it in the fall, or does it matter a whole lot? Or I mean, how much does it help? I mean, I assume the root pruning thing is if you get it ready to ball, sort of.
Right. You're trying to encourage roots within a smaller area if you really feel like that's going to be a problem. Catalpas are pretty tough trees for the most part. I'd almost be inclined just to go ahead and try to get as much of the root as you possibly can here in the spring before it leaves out and then go for it from there. Now you do realize catalpa can be a little bit messy tree. I mean, they're beautiful trees and they're native and all that kind of good stuff, but realize they do have big flowers, big pods, big leaves, so it definitely would be a plant that I probably wouldn't put it in my front yard. I'd be more thinking about it in, kind of like in the back 40 or something like that. So I just wanted to kind of warn you a little bit about that.
Well, I regard some leaves as food for my compost heap. So
there you go.
I like the refuse.
There you go.
Or I don't call it refuse.
That's right.
About the clematis, it's both recommended to be a good plant for a pot. I put one in an oak barrel. But it's also supposed to have cold feet, they say, right? Is that true? You want to have...
Right.
Okay.
Right. They really don't like... They like a cool base and a warm top, if that makes sense.
But the one in the barrel died on me, and I never noticed it needing water or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It just sort of, went away without me noticing it or something.
Right.
I don't know. It dried up here and there, but actually the... So I'm wondering, and it's on the pot is on a north side of a fence kind of thing, so it doesn't get any sun on the. But the one that I have in the ground is doing fairly okay, even though it had some problems too. So I'm wondering if I just didn't notice that it needed water more often, was there anything that went around last summer that took out clematis? So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, certainly, although it sounds like you've got it shaded, certainly the pots can have a tendency to dry out more often. They certainly have a tendency to be hotter. Those kind of things certainly can happen. So I'd wonder about that a little bit. And you had really good drainage in there. There wasn't a problem with it being too wet in there, was it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. But it's kind of odd that it's both recommended to have cold, cold soil and it be in a pot. But like I said, it should have been well shaded. And
right.
So
right. And when did you notice it die back?
It's sort of, I think it was sort of August, so dryness may have been a factor. But
Okay. The only reason I mentioned that, and probably would have happened a little bit earlier, they do get a thing called clematis wilt, and they kind of die back, and it looks like the thing is an absolute goner, but then they go ahead and sprout up again the next year.
Okay.
So I guess what I'm saying is don't give up on it.
Right.
You may want to wait and see, or maybe as you dig it up, you could tell whether the roots look like they're still alive. But sometimes, they do that.
I've heard they're pretty hardy, and then if you actually try to transplant them, sometimes they'll come up from the roots that you haven't taken, so...
Yeah, once it's one of those things, when they find a happy spot, they do beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of finding that happy spot.
Okay, well, I hope my pot's happy this year. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. We have about 15 minutes left on this part of Focus 580. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with University of Illinois Extension in Champaign County. She's with us every month, always on the second Tuesday, except I think next month we're talking about changing
it to
a Monday. But it's almost the second Tuesday. And she's here to answer questions about things that grow in the home landscape. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Urbana and online too. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
I had a question, a pruning question.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Mahonia and a boxwood. They're not formally cut in any way, but they're in an area where they're doing really well, but they're both getting a little bit wide.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to, keep them in bounds so they stay, get no wider than they are now. So I wonder, what do I need to do that?
Well, I think with both of those, because you really want to maintain, when you say they're not formally pruned, you really want to maintain the sort of, you want it to be informal, so you're not going to be using hedge shears.
Is there anything I should do, like root pruning, to keep them from getting wider?
Well, certainly root pruning is one of those things that will help them to stay more dwarf. You may just want to think about doing some pruning. And usually if you do a little pruning every other year or so, you can usually keep them somewhat in bounds.
Okay.
But it takes a little bit longer, certainly, than using hedge shears. But it's just a matter of sort of taking the stems and then following them down to where you get to the point where you finally want them. That's how big you want them. And so you're doing individual branches as opposed to just doing it all at the same time with head shears.
Well, the Mahonia particularly seems to spread by sort of underground.
See, they do that.
Stems.
That one you definitely might want to do some root pruning just to get some of those out.
Okay.
But unfortunately, that's kind of the nature of the beast, so you're probably going to have to do that on a regular basis.
Yeah, okay.
On Mahonia.
Every couple of years.
Yeah, every couple of years you're probably really going to have to do that. But a lot of times you can dig those up and give them to your neighbors. Hey.
Well, that's right.
Share.
Oh, yeah. In fact, that's how I started the one that getting it from a friend. Okay, right. But with the boxwood especially, just prune it.
Yeah, I would just prune. I'm not sure I'd do a whole lot of root pruning on it, since boxwoods sometimes have a little bit of a hard time here anyway. But so I think I'd just do a matter of pruning and then just do individual branches and then to the point where you can get it smaller.
If it looks sort of wide at some point, just take that down to the ground.
And just try to keep a certain amount of informality to it, but yet have it shorter.
I do want to do that, they are.
And it takes time, but it certainly can be done, and people could do that on ewes or any of the things. I'm big on the informal pruning, so you don't have to get tied to this, you know, this perfect sort of shape and having to prune them all the time. And
I don't mind doing hand pruning.
Right.
It's sort of interesting, actually.
Sure. It's very zen-like, actually.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. Next.
Zen and the Art of Pruning. Maybe I'll write that book.
We'll go to Terre Haute, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Sandy?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Almost happy spring.
Almost. We're almost there.
Yeah. A little bit of history. I collect pine needles to mulch with in my garden from the Vigo County area, and I collect in many, many areas. And last year I had two variegated red buds come up.
Variegated red buds?
Yep.
Wow. Cool.
I wonder who to talk to about this. I've asked a couple plantsmen in the Terre Haute area, but I can't seem to get anybody interested in it. Even there's a geneticist that works here from the cornfield.
So the leaves are actually green and white, and they seem to maintain that throughout the plant?
Yes, they are.
Oh, that is way cool.
Yeah.
Good question. I think I would probably talk to perhaps, trying to think of the two people. There's a person, I'm trying to think of what his name is, but he has, Connor Shaw is his name.
Connor Shaw.
Yeah, and he has Possibility Place Nursery here in Illinois, and it's up north. I'm not sure exactly what
Possibility Place.
Yeah, do you have a web access?
Yes, I do.
Okay, if you do a search for Possibility Place, you can probably find it. But he does a lot of stuff with natives, and I know he likes to do a lot of propagation, those kind of things. I think he would be a good person. There's another gentleman. I'm trying to think what the name of his place is, but his name is Guy Sternberg.
Okay.
And he actually has a nursery in southern Illinois, and I wish I could think of the name of his place, but I would imagine, again, if you do a web search, and it's just Guy Sternberg, I think it's Sternberg.
Okay. Would he be into a lot of variegated stuff?
Not necessarily. I guess I'm going for the people that have native stuff.
Uh-huh.
And certainly red buds are native.
Yes.
So they might have some interest. I guess I'm thinking about both those people because they also have a tendency to do a lot of propagation
have
stuff.
Have you ever heard of that in this area before?
A variegated? No, I've never seen a variegated one. You know, actually, when I think about it, I've never seen a variegated one.
Yeah. Well, it came up in, two of them came up side by side, and the third one in the pot, I guess, is what I'm guessing at, came up as a green-leafed one, so.
Oh, wow. So. You ought to figure out how to take cuttings of those and start making them. Maybe you could just sell them yourself. You could be the variegated redbud guy.
Name it after
You can wife. Name it after yourself or your wife.
Oh, my wife.
Hey, that's how these things get started.
Okay.
Go for it. Hey, you can send me a cutting if you want to.
I certainly will if something comes.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks for the call. We'll keep going here. And our next caller is in Matt Toon, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I have two white birches. And these two white birches are all probably 25 years old. And I have never seen a seedling or a sprout or anything come up from them.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't white birches sprout from seed?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. It could be just the conditions around it. I don't know if some of the cultivars might be, whether they're sterile. I don't know. That's probably at least a young enough one. It might be one of the cultivars. Do you know where it came from or anything about it?
One of the nurseries, I believe out of Yankton, South Dakota.
I'm just not sure now that I think of it. I've got some birches that I've never seen them reseed. And it could be just maybe conditions aren't right or, you know, something else is going on there that we're just not aware of. But you could probably do a little, again, some information, go to the library or whatever, and you could find out if that's what you're looking for them to reseed. You could probably find out what kind of conditions they need.
Well, I didn't know whether they were male and female.
No. They actually have separate flowers, but they're on the same plant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Oh, I've tried freezing them in the deep freeze and then planting them and still didn't get anything.
Yeah. Right offhand, I'm not sure what it takes, but I would imagine, I know that there's certainly a lot of reference books out there. So if you can check with your local extension office or go to the library, there are all kinds of books that, that will get more detail on that, on how you get those to propagate.
Okay, thank you much.
Good luck.
Very good, thank you. Well, we certainly have time for some other calls. Maybe about 5-6 minutes, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. You'd like to talk with Sandy. We've gotten a number of questions from people about trees, and I guess one of the just the general kinds of things I wanted to ask about was, at what point is it okay to start thinking about planting trees?
I would start thinking about it now.
Now? It'd be okay. It'd be okay. I mean, I guess I wonder when, at what point it's too soon to do it, and or you know, is there some sort of line, some sort of date you say, well, sort of think about it, but not before this day, but
yeah,
after this day.
You know, because most of the stuff that you're going to get is dormant more than likely anyway. This time of year, it'd be dormant, and so planting it probably really wouldn't be a big deal. Certainly through April, you can usually get away with planting things without a whole lot of worry. Now, if you were actually going to move them, I'd probably make sure that they were dormant and I wouldn't wait too much later. But certainly April and even into May, we just really wouldn't want to do a lot of planting maybe when we know it's going to be particularly hot, unless you know that you can provide water for them. So that's probably one of the big things. So pretty much, you know, we do a lot of planting at all kinds of times. So.
Yeah. Okay. A couple of other people here. Danville, line one. Hello.
Hi. Nimblewell. I've got Nimblewell and so do my neighbors. And I'm told there are no real good chemicals to get rid of that. Pull it out of the ground. Do you have anything more than that?
Yeah, I wish I had a good solution for you. And if people aren't familiar with Nimblewell, they probably have it. But it is a warm season grass, and that's probably one of the problems. It's a warm season weed, weedy grass. And so you usually can tell, as you know, as in it tends to grow, get brown earlier, kind of a straw color earlier in the season, in the fall, tends to green up late, very fine-leafed. It seems like the last couple of years, the seeds themselves must have done particularly well because I've had more comments about Nimblewell over the past few years. Because it is a perennial, and because it's a grass, we don't have a whole lot of controls for it when it comes to any kind of herbicide. So that's one of the big problems with it. I have had people that when that weed is actively growing, you can use Roundup or one of the non-selective herbicides, the glyphosate products, and you just spray that particular spot. And that will help to at least kill that particular Nimblewell and hopefully kill some of the roots as well, or just digging it out. So unfortunately, those are about your only options with any of the perennial grassy type weeds. So,
okay.
Sorry.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I wish there were some better solutions. But.
All
right. I do too.
Okay. Thank you. Let's talk with someone in Downs, line number four. Hello.
Hi. Sandy, wonderful program this weekend.
Good. Good. Oh, thanks. She's talking about our garden day. We had a wonderful garden day this past weekend.
Kendra is just so wonderful.
Yes, he is a wonderful, and he was on this program last month, but he really is a delightful person. He's just like his books read, which isn't always the case with authors. But
I'm sure even when he's sick. I have a question. Do you know about a product called Messenger?
Messenger. What's it supposed to be for?
Everything.
Well, I got to get me some of that.
I know, me too. Let me see. Let me think of all my problems.
It's from Cornell University. It's being produced commercially now under this name. The key ingredient is a protein called harpin, H-A-R-P-I-N. Hmm. They say it's not a fertilizer or a growth hormone, but it revs up the immune system, makes plants more resistant to diseases and stress. It triggers growth systems. Robust flower and fruit production, increased seed germination, improved root development.
Wow.
And improved tolerance to environmental stress.
Sounds like the elixir of life.
Really, I don't think I'd take some of that stuff myself.
Really? I was just thinking that, too.
Let's have some.
See what it does to people. We could try that out.
It's in the current issue of Fine Gardening.
Oh, I should look at that. Yeah.
I want this stuff, I think.
Yeah. I'm going to have to do a little research on that, too. But you might check, if it's from Cornell, I think I'd probably check their websites to see what they have on it or do a search on it.
About that.
Yeah, that's interesting. And certainly I think we're finding out more and more that sometimes, you know, it's just like with us, with people, you know, if you can do more preventative kinds of things in the long run, we're much better off than trying to just sort of do these Band-Aids and try to fix this and fix that and stuff. Actually making the plants or making ourselves healthier. So it makes sense to me. I haven't realized they'd isolated anything that would do that. So
really,
that's interesting.
All these things. I mean,
yeah, it sounds wonderful.
We'd pay quite a bit for it, would we not?
Yeah, but it's not. It's a protein.
That's what they
say.
The key ingredient is a protein.
Hmm.
And they stress that it's not a fertilizer. That you need to fertilize also.
Well, if you decide to use it this year, call back in the fall and let me know how it worked. Give us all a report.
Right. No, I won't do scientific tests, unfortunately.
I'll have to do a little searching on that. That's interesting.
It was just a good year or a bad year.
Yeah, it is hard sometimes to replicate that kind of thing. But, yeah, that's interesting. I have to look into that. Thanks for the thought.
Well, sure. We'll try and do one more. Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi, I just tuned in, so I'm sorry if this is a repeat. But I have some bushes out in my front yard. They're really sort of hedges, and they've grown to be over 4 feet tall and are hiding a lot of the house. And I'd like to cut them down to about 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to kill them?
Do you know what kind they are?
I don't.
Are they evergreens?
They're
evergreen,
and the green is just right around the edge. It's mostly branch inside.
Is it a real dark green?
Not real dark.
Are they soft to the... I'm trying to figure out what it is. Are they kind of soft when you touch them, or are they kind of prickly when you touch them?
They're more soft.
They're soft. It almost sounds like a U, I'd almost bet, I would think. The problem is, by taking them down that drastically, you're going to see a lot of just bare wood. Now, yews are one of the few where you can actually cut down quite a bit and they come out of it. The problem is they're going to look pretty bare and kind of funny looking for a while.
Okay.
As in, for a couple of years, they're going to look funny looking.
If I decide to just take them out, but I want to put in some sort of a hedge bush that's only going to grow to maybe 2-3 feet at the most, is there anything you could recommend?
And you want it to be evergreen? What side of the house is this on?
This would be on the north side.
North side. Well, you might actually be able to get away with boxwood. Because sometimes on the north side, I know it sounds kind of funny, but if you don't get a whole lot of wind on the north side, and mainly because they actually prefer a little bit of shade in the hot part of the season, if it's particularly windy, sometimes the boxwoods have a hard time, but you may find that that would actually be a better one for you. They don't grow quite as fast, and they don't get quite as big. But yews can be taken down, but you could take them down over a couple of years, but just realize it's going to take some patience and really realizing that they're going to look kind of bare for a while.
But they will come back.
Yeah, and what you want to do is you just want to follow the stem down and find where somewhere on that little brown stem there'll be a little bit of a tuft of green. And then that's where you'd cut down to. Now realize you're going to have these brown stems with a little tuft of green at the, and that's why they look kind of funny.
And when is the best time of year to do that?
I would think about doing it now.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Well, there we'll finish up for this time around with the promise that next month Sandy will be back, and we will do it again. Although I think we said next time we're thinking that it's going to be Monday.
The Monday before.
Monday before.
Our usual.
But she will be here, and generally she's here once a month, always on the second Tuesday, to take questions on lawn and garden care. And thank you very much.
Great, thank you.
Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Programming here on AM 580 made possible by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Programs also made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone roundtables, and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. We're going to take a break for an update on the markets. Then there's news. We'll be back, so stay tuned.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.